Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. This is going to be an empowering hour, continuing all this week with one segment of our program set aside by some leading, highly respected authority in the world of medicine and or science. We're going to show what a counter-opinion is to the standard views of the official narrative. The official narrative is that coronavirus is a pandemic, it is deadly, everyone is susceptible, we should have lockdowns, multiple lockdowns, we're now on our fourth lockdown, you must wear masks, even if you have worn one mask, wear two, even three, even if you've been vaccinated, you must wear masks, you must social distance. What if everything I've told you, with the exception that it's a real virus, and that has and will kill people, but not in the numbers they've told, not everyone is susceptible, and almost everything else they have said has been disproven by mainstream science and orthodoxy. So on the one hand, you have a relatively small group of pharmaceutical companies making vaccines or drugs for COVID. A whole industry has now come into being. And industries don't intend to be around for a short period of time. They want to be permanent. So now we're having to get the conditioning, the programming of the American conscious to believe that, hey, you're as susceptible, so you better do what you're told. And to make sure they do, we have draconian laws. So now a lot of very intelligent people within the scientific and medical community are looking at the evidence and say, hold on a second. The evidence is not there to support. To the contrary, it's just the opposite. You're causing a lot of people to die. More people are dying, for example, children of suicide than of COVID. Yet, no apologies from anyone on the receiving side of power and billions, hundreds of billions, and possibly even trillions of dollars in income. No one is going to let that go. So it's we the people have to look carefully for the truth, wherever it may be. And this is why we cannot make it political. We cannot make it based upon ideology. We have to simply look for the truth and bring it forward and always challenge it. Today, Dr. James Lyons Wheeler, a medical doctor, board certified, and also a person with background in science, is in Pennsylvania. He has held a press conference, and he's challenging many of the things, as our scientist physician yesterday challenged. And after he has his say, which is about 12 minutes, you can then offer your input on that. Yesterday, for example, one of the world's leading authorities in cardiology and nephrology, with more papers published than anyone else, over 1,000 papers on peer-reviewed journals, and over 400 majors on PubMed. That's a huge number. And he's very orthodox. And all the people I'm having on are pro-vaccine, pro-orthodoxy every way, but they're against what's happening with COVID. And he said, if you've gotten COVID, which most Americans have at this point, are asymptomatic, or maybe minor flare-up, like a flu or cold, you don't need the vaccine. The vaccine won't help you. In fact, it actually could hurt you. And children are especially not susceptible. So right away, that would completely, that would derail the entire vaccine movement. That means billions in profits. Do you really think the New York Times is going to allow Big Pharma not to make all of its money as it's doing nothing more or less than being an official spokesperson? My God, they're an embarrassment. They're certainly not practicing journalism anymore the way they should on these issues. So Big Pharma knows it can win because it owns the media. Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post, and they control much of Silicon Valley, Google, Facebook, Twitter. So people who have the truth are going to be shamed and attacked. People who are living with lies and deception are in absolute control at this moment. So he put himself on record. This every one of these people have a stellar background and record, no controversy. They're all going to be attacked. That's what's happening. So you're going to hear from him today. Also, the new rule from Bill Maher on Beware the Roaring Twenties. I thought you'd enjoy it. Gives you a little different perspective. Also today, we're going to go through some of the absolute truths about COVID and show you their absolute lies. You've been played, you've been lied to. So we'll show you that. Yesterday, we did a major article, and it just showed how we're being misguided on the numbers of people who are injured or dying in the United States from the vaccine. And that's posted on prn.fm as well as garynall.com. So we have a lot to share, and I'm going to read a story today. Now, it's written as a cautionary fiction. Is it? Is it fiction? After I read it, you'll have a chance to share your points of view. I think you'll find it of interest. But we're going to begin with a little deeper understanding of a few issues, like one of the most important things you could do for your health to help boost the innate immune system's capacity to stay strong. That's the immune system we're born with. Now, there are many different components to our immune system. But the one we're born with, like when we're breastfed, that is the best inoculation you can have. That's the best natural vaccine you can have, breastfeeding, from a healthy mother. Because if her consciousness is raised to where she's not having alcohol or inflammatory agents in her diet and allergic agents in her diet, and then she's eating a healthy plant-based diet, taking proper supplements, all that is being processed through her body coming out into the breast milk. And then when the mother kisses the baby and she's taking a saliva sample, unknowingly so, just she's loving her baby, but there's a whole mechanical aspect and biochemical aspect. She's picking up anything in the baby's saliva and then immediately manufacturing a response to it, an antibody response. So that's how wonderful that process is. But there was a whole generation conditioned to believe that breastfeeding was not in a woman's best interest. And besides, science had figured out what was in breast milk and put it into a formula. Not true. All that was a lie. And we saw the difference. So now what we have is we have a lot of people who are born with not a healthy immune system. On top of that, then they're degraded even further by multiple vaccines or environmental assaults. One nutrient stands out, and this is a superstar. And that's why I'm just going to really put my energy today on this. And I want to thank Dr. Paz Echervi from Life Extension, because he's the one who did the original work on this. I've been suggesting zinc almost to everyone that I counsel. That's a lot of people, by the way. That's closing in on 70,000, if not already exceeding it. That's one-on-one counseling, going clear back. And the reason I've chosen zinc is because it works in the scientific literature. You can go to PubMed, type in zinc nutritional benefits, and you'll just see thousands upon thousands upon thousands of articles that have been there showing why you need zinc. But right now, zinc is a part of two major therapies, ivermectin and a hydroxychloroquine with zinc. Now, zinc is actually what does the killing of the virus. The others allow for the entry into that domain where the viruses, the spike proteins are. And then also, depending upon the other complications, an antibiotic like azithromycin or some other antibiotic. But that's a simple protocol. Now, some people are confused. They think that they get the vaccines, then they take ivermectin, and they're all set. No. If you're taking ivermectin, if you don't have symptoms, there's no reason in the world that you should be considering the vaccine unless you're doing it just to make sure that you're a good citizen and you're obeying all rules. But I have a friend that's a radical. He's a very successful radical, and he's had two vaccines and taking ivermectin. And when I ask him why, he didn't have a scientific explanation. This is one bright guy who's just as conditioned as a lab rat when it comes to doing the wrong things. People are terrified. Otherwise, smart, intelligent people are just doing the wrong thing. Remember, the vaccine was never proven, never tested to prevent you from contracting COVID or giving COVID, infecting someone else, or dying, or going to a hospital. None of that. was a part of it, just impacting the minor to more elevated conditions. In any case, along comes zinc. Well, what if you took zinc and vitamin D3 and vitamin C and selenium every day? Wouldn't that also be stimulating the innate immune system that is there to work in tandem with the acquired immune system, where your body meets a pathogen and then creates a specific antibody, one specific in the antibodies, like a vaccine's very specific. But the innate, it has to help you with everything from molds and danders and dust and parasites, anything and everything that could hurt you, it identifies and creates some antibiotic reaction. So what helps the immune system? Zinc. Zinc is one of the main bone-building protocol enhancers. It's crucial for the growth and maintenance of your bone health. And people rarely ever think of zinc in that regard, but it does. Zinc is good for stimulating overall bone density, and most people are not aware of that. And remember, in bone modeling, there are more than 200 bones in our body, by the way, and about 90% of bone volume is made up of minerals and various proteins, and the remaining 10% is occupied by different kinds of cells, including osteoclasts and osteoblasts. And bone is not a static organ. It is constantly, 24/7, is going through a process known as remodeling. And during this breakdown and remove old and damaged bone, transferring minerals from bone tissue to blood. And osteoblast, same spelling except it's a B-L-A-S-T, use those minerals to form healthy new bone. So when this process works the way it's supposed to, our bone mineral density or bone mass remains at an optimal level. But unfortunately, in comes our diet, frequently deficient in calcium or magnesium or boron, the things that we require, and zinc. Most people are nutrient deficient. That's unfortunate. That leads, along with lack of proper exercise, over sitting to osteoporosis. Now, osteoporosis is a disease characterized by a severe reduction in bone mass. It causes bones to become fragile, porous, and very susceptible to fracture. And that also can lead to death. About more or less 10 million Americans over the age of 50 have osteoporosis. Additional 43 million Americans have osteopenia. That's osteopenia is a bone mineral density that is lower than normal, but not low enough to qualify as osteoporosis. So vitamin D, that's important for your bones to preserve bone mass. Calcium is, certainly. Vitamin K, absolutely. But zinc. Zinc is often neglected, and it's neglected and it shouldn't be. So zinc creates healthy bones. Zinc creates a healthy immune system. Zinc is there as one of the fighters against cancer. So the common cold, zinc, flu, zinc, osteoporosis, zinc. So you see, there's a lot that we need to know. And that's just one nutrient. Also, we have a lot to know when it comes to the severity of hair loss. And one of the things that I have seen among all the different things that can improve this is vitamin D. There is definitely an association between being deficient in vitamin D and a greater severity and premature onset of androgenic alopecia, otherwise known as male pattern baldness in young men. And so, in fact, about 85% of men with hair loss in one study were deficient in vitamin D. So take your vitamin D. I'm suggesting 3,000 to 5,000 units a day because it also really supercharges along with zinc, works synergistically with zinc. That's why you always take zinc and vitamin D together and vitamin C. So you want your hair to grow, take your vitamin D. Also, for those of you who have metabolic syndrome, and that's a lot of different conditions all wrapped up into one, a term, that's heart disease, that's diabetes, that's insulin insensitivity, etc., and high blood pressure, the one nutrient that people never think about and never use is L-carnitine, CARN, C-A-R-N-I-T-I-N-E. And a new meta-analysis of randomized placebo-controlled trials found improvement in factors that characterize metabolic syndrome among people given L-carnitine. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrients. Now, generally, you'll take anywhere from 700 to 2,000 milligrams of L-carnitine a day. Some cases, if you have elevated blood pressure for your heart, for blood glucose levels, you want to take more. But it's really important historically for maintaining heart rhythm. So people who might have, let's say, tachycardia or unstable heartbeat or AFib, if you're taking L-carnitine and magnesium together at high doses, you're doing yourself a lot of good, and that can save you from having a heart attack. Also, published in the peer-reviewed journal Neurology, they found that you can lower Alzheimer's risk by taking in more flavanols. Now, when you're having a vegetable juice, you're getting flavanols, green tea, flavanols, blueberries, flavanols. So take in your greens and your reds each day into your diet, and that can help you lessen the likelihood of having Alzheimer's. All right? That's the latest on Health and Healing. We are 17 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going directly into the commentary by Dr. James Weiler, W-E-I-L-E-R, and each day we're having a different one of these. So listen in on this. I think you'll find it of interest.
Our third expert that traveled from not New York or Michigan, but right here from the Pittsburgh area here in Pennsylvania, and has been with us before. We appreciate him coming back to the Capitol today to share his expertise. Dr. Lyons Weiler is a research scientist, author, and president and CEO of the Institute for Pure and Applied Knowledge. Thank you, doctor, for coming.
Thank you. Representative Metcalf, I want to thank the media for being here and thank everyone online for sharing this across all social platforms. I'm an objective research scientist, and I have two main points that I want to drive home. The first one is the number 21%. I want you to remember that number and write it down. It's a very, very important number to you if you're an American citizen. The second thing that, and I'll get to that in a minute, the second thing that I want to say is I'm not here in support of any particular bill. I run a not-for-profit, and I can't say yay or nay on my opinion. What my personal opinion is muted, and I don't mind that, but I can condemn the politicization of your health, the politicization and the commoditization of the American citizen's health. Pennsylvania citizen's health is not a commodity. It is neither a monetary commodity, nor is it a political commodity. And shame on you if you have changed your position or held on to a position in the light of evidence from data from studies that tell you that your position is wrong simply because you disagree with President Trump. Shame on you. You're hurting people, you're hurting society, you're destroying businesses. Shame on you. Now that I got that out, I can talk about some science. Okay. Historically, vaccines for coronaviruses have had a terrible safety record. There is a condition known as disease enhancement due to pathogenic priming. And this was discovered in vaccinated animals in past vaccine safety studies. When they did conduct vaccine safety studies on animals on coronavirus vaccines, where vaccinated animals got more serious disease after being vaccinated, and then when they acquired an infection from the wild-type vaccine, more of animals got serious infections, serious conditions, and more animals died. In my peer-reviewed research paid for the citizens of the United States of America through donations to IPAC, prior to the development of any COVID vaccines, I found that all but one of the proteins in the SARS-CoV-2 virus have what we call unsafe epitopes, right? Which are parts of proteins that are capable of causing immune conditions, autoimmune conditions, and immune responses against proteins in our own body. This is peer-reviewed research, and I'll be happy to provide the press with reference after this. About a third of the proteins that might be targeted by autoimmune conditions by SARS-CoV-2 viral proteins, either through infection or injection, target the immune system. But from the start, it looks like this virus has evolved the ability to attack our immune system as part of its disease-causing capacity. This pathogenic priming, I predicted in my study which parts of the human body would likely be most affected by pathogenic priming. And now studies by medical physicians, by medical teams around the world, are confirming my predictions. This is not simply a respiratory virus with respiratory symptoms. This affects many tissues across the body, and there's some grave concern if you're going to get infected. But where's the grave concern if you're going to be injected with these same proteins? Not a single, to my knowledge, not a single vaccine manufacturer took heed of my warning to remove those unsafe epitopes from the vaccines before they formulated their vaccines, in spite of being emailed my study with a plea to please consider taking out those unsafe epitopes. Your body has 500,000 peptides throughout your life. The coronavirus has something like 28 proteins. What's the probability that there's going to be many proteins that match at small segments of immunogenic epitopes? Very high. We now have results from front-runner vaccines from these hybrid trials where they skipped over the animals trials. FDA, in it absolutely ignoring safety margin, in a stunning decision, decided to allow Moderna and other vaccine manufacturers to skip the most important step in vaccine safety for coronavirus, which is the animal trials, to see if there's pathogenic priming, to see if this particular vaccine or that particular vaccine might cause serious problems through pathogenic priming. It's unbelievable that the FDA made this decision, and you know we made this specific recommendation that they do that in my study that I published. All right. Now what they're doing is they even said, well, we don't have to do phase one human trials and phase two human trials separate. We're going to combine them together because this is such a horrible epidemic. We need to get the science done fast. They're missing out on another opportunity to find safety signals, but they found them anyway. At the beginning of this time period where I'm speaking, I said to remember the percentage 21%. The only single data point, the datum that we have on what percentage of patients exposed, human patients exposed to a coronavirus vaccine have had serious adverse events is from the Moderna trial, and that number is 21%. 21% of people are having serious adverse events from this vaccine in that trial. The other ones haven't published their data yet to the point where we can understand that. Like Dr. New said, they're supposed to be transparent. But, you know, I'm really upset as a professional scientist and as a citizen that our public health officials have not given you the good word. The good word that it is now absolutely mundane routine medical care to take care of a patient with coronavirus. It is absolutely known that you should not put them on the full ventilator pressure. That's what killed most people in New York City. It is absolutely known that corticosteroids now take care of the autoimmune-like conditions that people are experiencing that I predicted in my study. So those high incidences of autoimmunity from a treatment, not a vaccine, a treatment, a medical treatment, they're now routinely used across the United States. It's also known how to treat the incidental coagulopathy, which only can be thought about as an outcome of something wrong with the viral proteins being in the body. And just this morning, I read in the journal The Lancet, their position is that antivirals are generally effective against coronavirus, COVID-19. The public needs to understand that tens of thousands and soon hundreds of thousands of medical doctors around the world are going to join me and others in condemning the politicization of coronavirus and public health in general, including vaccines. We have to understand that we're going to come together and have come together with joint resolutions about this political state to stand down on politicization of public health. Stand down on it, even if you're a public health official, right? You need to be a scientist first and a qualified one at that to conduct public health, and you can't just regurgitate what the CDC has to say. All right, so now we have really good news. Why do we not hear good news on treatments from our public health officials? Shame on them. They're keeping people in fear. Intentionally. Why? It's fair enough to speculate that perhaps after the election we will see a disappearance of their concern over coronavirus. So those people who would like to add coronavirus vaccine mandates to our society's response have to understand a few things. First of all, it's a disproportionate response given the rate of mortality. If you're not over 70 years old, you have less of a chance of dying of coronavirus than you do from influenza, thank goodness. However, if you want to mandate coronavirus vaccines, understand that you're going to if you're a medical physician, hear me well, if you want to reject 21% of your patients, and that's a low number, that's a lowball number, if you want to kick 21% of your patients out of your practice, be my guest, those patients are probably better off without you. So the estimates of coverage that are required to be needed to protect the population from vaccine herd immunity are that, and this comes from Paul Off at the Children's Hospital over in Philadelphia, efficacy rates as high as 50% and coverage rates as high as 75%. The Pew report from the other day, a poll says that 51% of the population do not want this vaccine. They won't take it. Not just that they won't be the first to line up, they won't take it. How are we going to get to 75% with only 51%? Well, we need a much more efficacious coronavirus vaccine. It is imperative that we do not discount prior immunity in the population from prior exposure to coronavirus-like viruses or to coronavirus itself. And if you look at the infection case, the infection fatality rate, not the case fatality rate, where you get a diagnosis. You take the symptomatics and the asymptomatics and put it together, the statistic that was published in May was less than influenza. The press has learned that, yes, we're going to have a problem with lung-sustained antibodies, but we've known that for coronaviruses from 1990. It's not new. The press has reported that. But the press now, and thank you for doing this, has reported that we have memory B cells and memory T cells in response to coronavirus, so our bodies will remember how to be immune to these coronaviruses without having to carry around antibodies to everything we've ever been exposed of, expressing those proteins in our body all the time. That would be metabolically unsustainable. It's not how human bodies work. It's not how mammalian bodies work. So this mystery of public health officials not working to reduce concern can only be seen as political, and please join me in condemning that. Our reaction to coronavirus has already been worse than the virus itself. A terrorist could never succeed as well at shutting down businesses with a bomb in the United States as we have by this ridiculous, inaccurate testing. Dr. Singhang Lee from Milford, Connecticut, published a study that showed that the reference samples that are used to validate the COVID-19 test, 30% were false positives. When he sequenced the PCR product, 40% were false negatives. What are we doing with PCR testing? And if you test everyone in a population with a CT scan, you're going to find cancers in everyone, and you're going to do biopsies on everyone at a rate where you're going to end up doing a lot of harm. Every person that has a false positive rate, when the infection rates are low, and it's something like 2% active infection, maybe, maximum, per year with coronavirus across the United States right now, we're going to have far more false positives, even if the false positive rate is just 1%. What does that lead to? It leads to contact tracing to those 14 people that you saw in the mall the other day. You're shutting down those 14 businesses, bomb after bomb after bomb after bomb, shutting down our economy. That's cruel. And then on top of it, we're bringing quaternary ammonium compounds into schools. I'm going to spell a name for you, H-R-U-B-E-C, Terry Rubick. The H is not pronounced, Terry Rubick. She did studies of these cleaners that we're bringing into the schools and we're spraying all over the schools every day or every week to fight coronavirus. She found in mice neural tube defects to the rate of 15% of the pups, and a reduction in the reproductive capacity of both male and female mice of 50% with these, they're called quats. Look them up. I just did an Unbreaking Science episode. Look at hashtag Unbreaking Science. I interviewed Dr. Rubick yesterday. What are we doing to our children, exposing them to these cleaners that might shut down their reproduction, that might harm their immune systems, that might cause their children for two generations to be less reproductively capable, for two generations to have neural tube defects? look up and think about what we're doing. Our society is messed up because we don't think about the attendant consequences, and we base our for-profit medical system on the externalization of costs on people like these families. She bears the cost. You all bear the cost. Let's bring liability back to the vaccine program in the United States. And the last thing I want to say, that the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program itself, I believe, is corrupt. I was an expert in that program, and I quit that program after a special master attempted to bribe me to change my testimony for payment. And you put that on the record. On top of it, the probability of anybody getting, you have no chance in the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, because you heard earlier, HHS determines which vaccine injuries are real. HHS is the defendant in the case. HHS writes its own ticket to what you can charge it with. It's like me robbing a bank and saying, you can't charge me for taking the 50s. I'm writing the rules in my own courtroom. That system is so backwards, it's unbelievable. So please, do your own research, look up quats, look up quacks, look up coronavirus, and I want to thank you, Representative Metcalf, for today.
All right. Going public as he has, as a leading peer-reviewed published scientist, he's speaking out. And it's important you realize the quality of these individuals when they speak out. Now, this is the interesting part. I'm going to share an article written by T.E. Creus from the Off-Guardian. It's called The Great Unvaxxed. Here's the question I'm posing to you. How much of this do you believe is fiction? How much of it could become reality? How much is reality now? What will this mean for those who choose not to be vaccinated? This is an interesting story. Then after that, Richard Gale will be joining us, and I'll also be giving you some of the highlights of the latest studies around the world on ivermectin and some of the problems when the media starts going after anyone, any scientist, any journalist who talks in a way that threatens Anthony Fauci's control over this official established narrative on COVID. Here is the article. The vaccine was a resounding success. Yes, there had been a final death rate of 10% among the vaccinated, but this was mostly among the elderly or the already ill, so it was probably not the vaccine's fault. And if it was, no one could prove it one way or the other. And even if they could, well, the vaccine manufacturers were not liable to lawsuits due to the agreements they had made with the various governments. In any case, the pandemic had ended. That was for sure. Of course, the masks and the lockdown mandates continued to be enforced. The reason was that while the pandemic had most certainly been defeated, the virus still existed in its natural form somewhere out there, and so it was vital to continue with the safety procedures to avoid any possible resurgence of the disease. So what? People got used to it, as they had gotten used to so many other things before that. And was wearing a mask in the inn much more of a problem than wearing a helmet or a safety belt? Was being forced to stay at home a few months every year much different than being forced to be at the office working for 5 days out of the 7 in a week? Rules are rules, and those were not as bad as others that had been instituted in the past. But there was something that worried the authorities, and while most people had predictably complied with the mandatory vaccination campaign, there were a few groups that had refused them, alleging religious or health reasons, and found refuge in rural communities living off the grid. They had abandoned the use of mobile and network technology and so could not be traced so easily. And since non-digital cash had been abolished, they appeared to have returned to a form of commerce based upon exchange of physical goods. At first, the authorities ignored them. Most people saw them as a minority of loser hicks, anti-vaxxers, as they had been called in earlier pre-scientific times. And since it was unlikely that too many among the masses would opt for such a harsh lifestyle away from the comforts of modern urban life, they were not seen as a menace. But what happened in the end was that rumors started to appear, even in the cities, about small communities where no one needed to wear a mask, and people were dancing and smiling, and food was delicious and natural, and people were even gasped, falling in love and procreating in new ways, natural ways. Of course, this was an obvious and mendacious fallacy, but the authorities could not permit such fairy tales to gain acceptance among the people at large, so they started to persecute the great unvaxxed, as they had been called, or the free renegades, as they preferred to call themselves. Their communities were dispersed, their leaders were arrested, planting organic, unmodified seeds became illegal. It was dangerous, the authorities alleged. Non-genetically modified crops were unsafe and could lead to sickness or birth defects. Many of the people who lived in the previously free rural communities were arrested and forcibly vaccinated, but some were killed in shootings with police. But in the end, it was not possible to arrest or forcibly vaccinate them all. Now, hidden among the normal population using fake certificates, there lived an undisclosed number of unvaccinated people whom the authorities had been unable to locate or identify. A young woman named Miranda, who was born in a barn in the literal sense and never vaccinated, was one of them. When organic farming was prohibited, most of the land was taken over by the large companies using mechanized agriculture. She was forced to move to a small village where she subsisted doing odd jobs and occasionally teaching art classes. She had learned drawing and painting as a child and was quite talented, and she could sing very well also. She had a fake vaccine certificate that looked, for all purposes, almost identical to the real ones, and while a bio test could determine that she had not really taken the vaccine, as it was popularly called, she was careful never to be in any position that could require any kind of test. For a few years, she and hundreds of others like her had subsisted in this manner. But it was not ideal and never easy, because before at least the renegades could live freely in their own communities under their own rules, but now they had to hide and wear masks and follow dictates like everyone else. So what was the point? If they could not be free in any case, why not do like all the others and just take the vaccine and be done with it? Miranda thought about it sometimes, but she had promised her parents, who had died in a shootout with the police, that she would always remain faithful to their ideals. And so she refused to compromise. She knew or hoped that the current tyranny could not be maintained forever. She wanted to believe that it would be possible one day to be free again. Finally, they got her. It was her own stupid mistake. She was outside, a routine patrol was approaching, and she had left her fake certificate at home. This could not normally happen, but she had recently bought a new jacket and had forgotten the certificate in the pocket of the old one. Walking around without a certificate was illegal, and so they did their scan on her arm, finding no signs of vaccination, and later a second test found no trace of antibodies in her system. Unable to explain the reason or to produce a valid vaccination certificate, she now was looking at a problem, and as a result, she faced jail and later federal prison. Now, there was an option, and the option, and legally possible with a recent change in the Constitution, but it was not what that she wanted. No, she had to freely choose to vaccinate, not only because otherwise she could have become a martyr and inspire other rebels, or because people could start to think that there was really something bad or sinister about the vaccine, but because, in this case, the warden firmly believed that winning by persuasion was better than winning by force, And so the warden was convinced of his own self-righteousness. He could not understand her stubborn refusal. Hadn't he, like all others, voluntarily taken the vaccine? As a member of the upper classes, he reminded her he was not required to do it at the time. And yet, he had volunteered. Why? Because he believed in law and order. But most of all, because he believed in the vaccine. He was sure that sooner or later she would be able to be convinced, and she would take the vaccine. Otherwise, there were some very harsh aspects. But Miranda was indeed very stubborn. She refused all the options given to her. She preferred jail to vaccination and denial to compromise. She even refused to see a psychiatrist. So she lingered in prison for months and months. Now, one day the warden brought her a book, and she had requested from the prison library, Civil Disobedience by Thoreau. And now, the story goes on, but I'll summarize it. She was given a request for salt, and then when she asked for the salt with her meal, which wasn't normal, on the bottom of the salt shaker was a key. She escaped from jail based upon what was on a note, only to end up in the woods at a cabin to find that it was a setup. And now they had her where they could give her a death sentence. And so she was told, take the vaccine and live, or deny it anymore and be killed. And so she felt that death was preferable than living in this very repressed new way, this new world order. And that's how it ends. And it's fiction in some respects, but how much of what this story is about is really about looking at the truth of what we're in now and what could come from this? Because we've already seen a lot of draconian measures. Let me just give you some updates on this. This is not fiction. Everything I'm about to share with you is fully factual. Based. The CDC Foundation is not a government entity, as many conflicts of interest. Quote, the CDC is an advertising agency for pharmaceutical companies. That may come off as some grandiose pronouncement meant to gather clicks and attention, but the agency does what it is supposed to do, promote and advance the interests of its stakeholders. There's nothing impartial, objective, or neutral about the CDC and its sister agency, the National Institute of Health. Doctors and scientists who have dedicated their entire existences to medicine and saving lives are being decertified, censored, and discredited by the CDC for presenting peer-reviewed evidence that is contrary to the COVID-19 agenda. Media that do not toe the doomsday COVID narrative are also censored. Search COVID blog and COVID legal USA without quotes in any search engine besides Google, and we come up first or second. Now, do Google, the censorship is blatant and obvious. So it goes on to talk about how corrupt the CDC is. That is correct. Now, there is also other things. You mentioned organic gardening in there, that the people who decided not to vaccinate were living in more rural environments and using organic. Now there's a whole push by corporate agendas, including Bill Gates leading it, to derail the European Union's rules on new GMOs. Quote, this is from the Corporate Europe Observatory. CRISPR files exposes lobbying tactics to deregulate the new GMOs with European Green Deal and the farm to fork strategy. They've been committed to a fundamental shift away from industrial agriculture as we know it today, with a 50% pesticide reduction target and a 25% organic agriculture target within the next 10 years. Business as usual is no longer an option. This creates an existential crisis for those corporations that are dominant both in the pesticide and in the commercial seed market, notably Bayer, BASF, Corteva, DuPont, and Syngenta. And then goes on to talk about how Bill Gates and them are putting together enormous lobby to try to influence, to make sure the European governments, as they've done all governments around the world, to only use GMOs, genetically modified. This is from Vaccine Reaction. Quote, woman dies minutes after getting COVID-19 vaccine at Cal Poly in Pomona, California. So she got her vaccine, Pfizer's vaccine, and drops dead. Do you see that anywhere? Nope. And there's a lot of people doing that. Quote, this is from Gateway Pundit, Christina Lely. Biden administration working to launch a vaccine passport so Americans can prove they've been inoculated and return to normalcy. We knew this was coming. The Biden administration is now working to launch vaccine passports so Americans can prove they've been inoculated. The vaccine passports will be the key to returning to normalcy and may actually control who is allowed to participate in the workforce, who can go to any public venue or not. And they're already doing this, by the way, with their green passports in Israel. And by the way, Israel also had the highest spike in deaths and coronaviruses after the vaccine was implemented there. So now they want the green passports. This is from Glenn Greenwald. Journalists attack the powerless, then self-victimized to bar criticisms of themselves. Quote, powerful media figures now invoke sexist and racist tropes to cast themselves as so fragile and marginalized that critiques of their work constitute bullying and assault. He talks about the USA, second biggest distributed newspaper, USA Today, outside the Wall Street Journal, is number one, and how their journalists went on the attack against people who are crowdfunding to pay for their legal bills after the January 6th event. Now, mind you, these are people who have not been found guilty of anything, and shouldn't they have the right to defend themselves and get attorneys and pay for those attorneys, which are expensive. But not according to USA Today. Quote, the USA Today reporters went far beyond merely reporting how this fundraising was being conducted. They went so far as to tattle to PayPal and other funding sites on two of these defendants, Joe Biggs and Dominic Pizzola, and then boasted of their success in having their accounts terminated. Wow. What brave and intrepid journalists work, speaking truth to power and sending up two major power centers by working as little police officers for tech giants to prevent private citizens from being able to afford criminal lawyers. Clear the shelves for the imminent Pulitzer. Whatever you think about the Capitol riot, everyone has the right to a legal defense and to do what they can to ensure they have the best legal defense possible, especially when the full weight of the Justice Department is crashing down on your head, even for nonviolent offenses, which is what many of these defendants are charged with due to the politically charged nature of the investigation. So now the journalists at newspaper are attacking people who want to defend themselves. Okay. This is also from Green Med Info, Sarah G. Quote, digital hate groups continue attacking against health freedom advocates. Quote, recently, an organization calling itself Center for Countering Digital Hate, CCDH, published what amounts to a digital hit list targeting 11 health freedom and natural health advocates, including myself and my wife, Kelly Brogan, MD, and contributors to our newsletter, including Barbara Fisher, Christina Northrup, MD, Robert Kennedy Jr., and Dr. McCullough. CCDH's claim is that those who raise well-documented safety issues with vaccines, including the new experimental RNA COVID vaccines, are dangerous anti-vaxxers and should be vilified, suppressed, and ultimately deleted from the Internet or even accused of crimes. Independent journalists from offguardian.com have done extensive analysis. By the way, I'll be doing this follow-up on this hate group because this is all backed by Big Pharma. But so you want to speak out, you've got a whole hate campaign going against you. All right? Now, those are some of the topics you must take into consideration, and there's hundreds of more when it comes to what's happening when you speak out. But who's speaking out? Not the alternative doctors. It is the orthodox doctors. Your turn to speak out. What do you think the meaning of that article is? How bad do you think it could get? Call us at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. By the way, tonight on the Progressive Commentary Hour, with our conversations with remarkable, it's not a conversation with remarkable mind, it's Del Bigtree, who's going to take on the whole idea that there should be hate campaigns against anyone who speaks out, no matter how honest they are in the evidence they have and accurate they are, they're being targeted. And he's one of the top targets. Now we'll see who calls in. Happy to hear from you. And Richard Gale's on the line now. And Richard, until people call in, please give us your assessment of what are the biggest errors in what we're being told from Anthony Fauci and the CDC and the World Health Organization that there is more than ample evidence from multiple sources that they were wrong.
Yes. There's a long litany of lists in which they've been wrong and where we really have to question the honesty and integrity of our health officials. The Lancet recently published a study where the COVID reinfections are extremely rare. So if you've been infected in the past, the likelihood of you being reinfected again is, according to a Danish study in the Lancet, it was just about 0.6%, okay, that will be tested positive again. That would immediately discount the urgency and need for vaccinating everybody. If people are showing that they are receiving natural immunity to the virus, and there's been increasing number of reports that of the length of natural immunity to COVID. One thing that came out, and this was reported today, so this is kind of new, and I did not send this over to you, but the CDC just reported today, came out, that the vaccines have prevented 90% of the infections during the 2 weeks after receiving a second dose. And the study looked at about almost 4,000 healthcare personnel. But here's the interesting caveat. Okay, and again, it goes back to your bigger question, too. Isn't it kind of unusual that we've known that the 35 to 40 cycle threshold of PCR testing is invalid for any kind of accuracy, and yet they've been relying upon this for, we're going to be heading on to a year very soon. But then you had, just not that long ago, the World Health Organization then came out and with informing vendors that they need to lower their threshold cycle. Okay, and so when that happened, when they did that, the cases of COVID dropped 50% in a month. Now that was done in January. So this is just about the time of the rollout. Okay. So you've got the rollout, you've got a decrease in the number of cases, and then we're finding that now they're using a lower threshold in the cycles, that now they're making the claim that the vaccines are effective. Okay? So, but again, the CDC's test was relying on PCR testing to make this determination that 90% of infections are 2 weeks, but now they're using a much lower threshold, so you're not going to be getting all these false positives. I mean, these are the little kinds of just shenanigans that you find going on that really make you question, and we don't like to kind of get into the conspiratorial thing that all this is being orchestrated. But these are these little clues that keep on coming up on many of these different topics concerning lockdowns and the complete failure of looking at the long-term effects of the lockdowns. There's 30 separate studies now out of Germany, the UK, Cornell University, Israel, that's showing that the lockdowns, there's been no evident impact on having any effect whatsoever on the spread of the of the virus and of infection rates. And Ioannidis from Stanford University just a couple months ago also came out with his new study showing that these, what they call non-pharmaceutical interventions, so that's the mask wearing, social distancing, that's non-pharmaceutical interventions, or what they call NPIs. And his latest report and study out of Stanford University showed that there's been little to no benefits from this, from these. And we're just not even hearing about even some of the states, such as Rhode Island, that kept all their schools open. And yes, the teachers, the administrations, the students, they experienced challenges that they had to do. But overall, it was very successful that they kept all their schools open and that they discovered the COVID cases of those attending the school were less than those that remained isolated and were doing, you know, online or studying from home. And again, we're not looking at, you know, like the UNICEF. Who's heard of the UNICEF report that shows that childhood development is being repressed? Number of children hungry, isolated, abused, and poverty is being increasing worldwide. Childhood poverty now, just as expected, just after this past year of all these lockdowns and that's been taken, that's been underway, that childhood poverty is expected to decrease by 15% by the end of this year. We've seen how it's rising to eating disorders. FAIR did a big report looking, it was a big, large global report, and just the mental health disorders have doubled. Self-harm cases and suicides are up 333%. Overdoses, drug overdoses among teens is up 120%. And then all the while, you know, we end up hearing that in February, the Independent reports there's not been a single case of flu detected in the public health England system so far. In February, not a single case. CDC, flu's dropped to almost zero. Last year, though, there were 58 million cases. So it's all, you know, we could go on and on and on.
It's just
time right now. But
good. I appreciate you sharing those insights. Let me give people just one final thought. They're so wrong about the masks. They told us to wear masks, but they didn't have the scientific studies peer-reviewed prior to telling us wearing the mask. They told us to distance. They didn't have the peer-reviewed studies showing the distancing. They told us to lock down. They didn't have the peer-reviewed studies. Now, a year later, that we actually have quality studies on masking and distancing and shutting ourselves into our homes. They're on the wrong side of this. They do not have the compelling evidence on their side. And so we follow the dictates of people based upon misinformation. And now they're doing the same thing with the vaccine, with also, which we're seeing, are thousands of people dying and more than hundreds of thousands of people in just the European Union and yet in the United States and yet in around the world, the side effects. And yet these are being downplayed. And yet, one good example, you're told to close down all the small businesses in America that are not essential. So millions of people are thrown out of work, and most of those businesses, 80%, will never reopen. And yet, look at Walmart, and look at Costco's, and look at big Whole Foods and all the other box stores. They have thousands of people in there each day, and they're walking in the aisles side by side, and yet that's not social distancing. And then look at a basketball game. Just look at the NBA. Let's say you've got all those players on the floor. They're all handling the same ball. They're all sweating. They're all, you know, breathing hard. And so they're all exposed to each other's, you know, air particulate matter. And so that's fine. But then they go outside after the game and suddenly they have to put on a mask and social distance. It's absurd. You know, the athletes on the football field the same way. And yet, if a person tests positive, they're testing positive on a false test, the PCR test. And that's been clearly demonstrated. So everything we could do wrong, we've done wrong. And thank Anthony Fauci and Bill Gates for that. So I think it's time that we looked more intelligently, reasonably at what we have done and try to pull ourselves out of this by offering forums to those who have the science and common sense and the peer review literature on their side. Richard, thanks for calling in, sharing your points
of view.
We're out of time, everyone. Tonight, 7 o'clock, a very interesting hour, Progressive Commentary Hour with Del Bigtree about what we should know about the attacks against people who have been right from the people who've been wrong. Have a nice day, everyone.